Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Tune in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in DC. I'm your host, Kiko Bourne. If you're a DC voter preparing for the elections on June 19th and you care about the local food system, this episode is for you. DC recently held its first Candidates Food Forum, where candidates for at-large council seats shared their platform for improving food access, nutrition, and food business sustainability in the city. Over 500 people across all 8 wards of DC watched live, including at watch parties on Facebook and in person at NPR's Studio One, and that's where I took in the action. So I was there recording the debate, and today I'll recap key themes from each at-large council candidate, and I'll help you form your opinion of the issues and who's best suited to make the change you want to see. I also have an expert in studio with me to help analyze the dialogue. Beverly Wheeler, Executive Director of DC Hunger Solutions, will weigh in with her perspective on the opportunities these candidates introduce if elected. I'll play a few clips from the forum in case you missed it. For example, to set the lunch agenda mood, let's start with this one.
My name is Jeremiah Lowry. I'm running for at-large DC City Council on a Democratic ticket. Election's June 19th. Early vote's June 4th. Don't forget to vote, y'all. That's the most important day. You can listen to us, but you got to make sure you vote.
That was Jeremiah Lowry, one of the first-time candidates for city council. And as he said, early voting started Monday, and election day is this coming Tuesday. And I have to say, as a D.C. resident, voting is in the air. When I went swimming at a public pool yesterday, all the early voting was happening. All the lawns are littered with signs. Our mailboxes are flooded with campaign materials. It's a pretty exciting time. But before we dive into the election, let's get rolling with some Kiko's food news. Say goodbye to the Monsanto brand. It was just purchased by Bayer, which announced Monday that it will nix the brand name when its $66 billion acquisition of Monsanto is complete. The merger, approved by the Justice Department last week, will create the largest seed and agrochemical company on Earth, uniting Bayer's pesticide business with Monsanto's genetically modified crop portfolio. The decision to drop Monsanto's name is part of a wider campaign to win back consumer trust. Monsanto has become one of the most hated large companies in the world, its name regularly splashed across protest banners. A recent article on Grub Street called, quote, "Where Are All the Black Restaurant Critics?" argued that despite the majority of this year's James Beard Awards going to women and people of color, the slice of the journalism world that covers food, chefs, and restaurants remains deeply unintegrated with black points of view. The author explains that at present, it's impossible to read about high-end restaurants through the eyes of a prominent black diner or critic. Definitely worth checking that one out. Again, it's on Grub Street, and it's called Where Are All the Black Restaurant Critics? Important to underscore that issue. Finally, the best thing I read in the wake of, I should say, finally, and this is a very, different tone and a serious, grave tone. It's been a big week, and we dealt with the loss of a huge leader in our field. And the best thing I read in the wake of Anthony Bourdain's death was written by Kat Kinsman for Food and Wine, and it was called We Need to Talk About Anthony Bourdain. And it started, quote, "Chefs die all the time, and no one talks about it." And she continues to talk about the website she runs, which is called Chefs with Issues. And it's a platform to talk about the painfully taboo topic of mental health in the restaurant industry. And she goes on to write, quote, "Chefs die all the time, in sudden ways and in long, slow slides. Sometimes it's an accident, but far too often it's by their own hand, and I cannot stand that happening one more time. A chef died today. Let's talk about it," end quote. And I just want to say that I've had friends who are chefs posting, in their various ways or talking in their various ways about how they've struggled. And if there's any silver lining to this loss, I think it is, you know, opening people up to having hard conversations and introspection and getting help. So on that note, we'll take a break. Please stay tuned. And when we come back, I'll introduce Beverly and we'll get talking about the first ever DC Candidates Food Forum. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Keto. The song's called Bring a Little Love. Find his music on soundcloud.com/Keto, K-I-E-D-O. Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Welcome back. You've tuned into one of Lunch Agenda's food policy classes. I'm Kiko, your host, and these episodes are made to help you take action if you're someone who wants to understand how the governments make decisions about laws, budgets, and procedures that affect our food system. On June 19th, DC primary voters will select nominees for mayor, attorney general, council chairman, council at large, and four ward-level council seats. But what makes this election different is that DC residents were able to attend the first ever Candidates Food Forum to prepare us. So back, you know, about a month and a half ago on May 19th, candidates for citywide council seats, chair and at large, gathered to share their platforms on food-related topics, which definitely did raise the profile of food issues in influencing city elections. The forum booked up quickly, and many people weren't able to nab a seat at NPR. So today we're bringing the action to you. And as I said before, put it on your calendar. Election Day is June 19th, next week. So I'll be playing a few segments from the candidate statements that night, and I'll be adding commentary and conversation with Beverly Wheeler, who's the executive director of DC Hunger Solutions. Beverly is responsible for leading efforts to improve public policies to end hunger, reduce poverty, increase the availability of healthy, affordable food in low-income areas, and maximize participation in all federal nutrition programs. Dr. Wheeler has worked with the DC Council as executive director of the State Board of Education and Neighborhood Action. She's also worked as chief of staff to Phil Mendelson and special assistant to three city administrators. She's the former president and CEO of Center City Public Charter Schools. Welcome, Beverly.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us and adding your expertise. So I'll come right and say, I'm not a political expert, and I will offer my observations, and please chime in, you know, wherever you want to kind of add perspective for our listeners. So I'll start with, you know, asking you to set the context here for our listeners. Can you explain the upcoming election of next Tuesday as it relates to the eventual, you know, final election in November? Who are we able to vote for this coming week? You know, because a lot of the people that we'll be talking about today are independents, and so I want, you know, the listeners to understand the difference of the two elections.
Okay, thank you for that opportunity.
Yes.
But before I do that, I want to say thank you for mentioning Anthony Bourdain. Many of us in D.C. met Anthony Bourdain at Leal, which he also owned downtown,
right,
at 13th and Pennsylvania Avenue.
There was a Leal in D.C.?
There was a Leal,
wow,
in D.C., and a lot of political people actually ate at Leal,
wow,
so you would find us all there often, so we miss him also.
Wow.
But so toward that end, we have the primary, as you know, June 19th. You've mentioned we still have early voting until the 15th, so if you can get out, beat the crowds, I'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned some of the people we're going to vote for. So in the primary, we start to winnow down those individuals who will be allowed to be on the general ballot in November.
Right.
So we do have Also, it didn't mention was a delegate position for the House of Representatives. We also have our Attorney General, which is really critical for us, our United States Senator, who works around statehood, as well as our representative. So those are also key pieces. But the critical ones are the mayor, the chair of the council, the four sites, the four wards, 1, 3, 5, and 6. So people don't understand that not all the wards are up. So we have that piece. Now, you mentioned the people who are at the forum, but who weren't there. Those are the independents. Right. They don't get to have a primary.
Right.
So in the primary, there is the Statehood Party has a primary, the Democratic Party has a primary, Republicans have a primary, and the Green Party has a primary. So they have primaries. Once we get all of the massive amounts of people down, then on November 6th, you get to vote for your final ones.
And how many at-large seats are there on the council, and how is that determined? You know, the at-large seats being those that don't represent a specific ward.
So there are 4 at-large seats, and 2 get chosen. And at no time are any of the 4 allowed to be all Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know in the city that would be very easy.
Right.
So we always have a seat for an independent or a Republican. And people have found recently that running independent is really a nice way or another way to get on the ballot.
Gotcha. So let's set the scene for the listeners. Here is the opening of the forum, moderated by NBC's Chris Lawrence.
This is the first ever Candidates Food Forum. It's hard to believe. In all the years that we focus on issues relating to housing, economics, jobs, education, that this is the first time we're actually going to take a hard look at how candidates can impact food insecurity here in the district.
So I agreed with him that it's about time that food becomes part of candidates' platforms in a more elevated way. I think, needless to say, I think food touches every aspect of our lives. But his opening statement foreshadowed a problem that I saw with the forum, which was that it really focused on food insecurity. I thought it, in a way, at the detriment of other food-related issues, such as the environment, such as, you know, food business sustainability. And so I was kind of wishing that there were questions more from, you know, organizations like RAMW, Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington, or from the Business Incubator Set, or from farmers, you know, the farmer perspective. And, you know, maybe from where you said it hit the topics that you wanted, but did you feel that it covered the whole sphere of food issues that the council deals with in kind of an even way?
Not really, but when you understand that there are a lot of anti-hunger advocates in town, there are a lot of people who really spend an inordinate amount of time worrying about and trying to fix access to healthy food. And so the group that got together around this, there are a group of us that deal with that.
Right.
And we are the ones that are constantly advocating for the idea of food being as equally important in the eyes of our government as education and housing.
Mm-hmm.
We're also wanting to deal with the issues for low-income residents who often aren't heard. So this forum was to say, and it's the first one, maybe the next time we can have a sequel of
right.
that. But this was the very first one, and we really needed to know, what are you going to do? And for me, 1 in 7 households in the District of Columbia face some form of food insecurity. 26% of families with children have some form of food insecurity. So for those of us who are trying to raise the issue of healthy food access and how we can help around those issues, it was perfect.
Okay. I understand that. So let me breeze through for the listeners who was there, you know, who the candidates are that talked about these issues. So on the Democrat side, there were three, I believe, candidates. There was Anita Bonds, who's an incumbent. And, you know, I'd like to ask you, actually, what's Councilmember Bonds' track record with regard to food issues?
Well, I don't want to really get into those kind of issues.
Okay.
I really sort of want to stay where we want to hold people accountable.
Okay.
So what they said at the forum and what they wrote in their statements and we put out, we are going to hold them accountable. So if they weren't intending to do that, then they better hope they don't win.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because we will be holding people accountable.
Okay. So beyond Anita Bonds, there's Marcus Goodwin, who, you know, spent a lot of time talking about his childhood growing up in Ward 8 with a single mother and shopping with SNAP benefits. You know, I learned after the fact that, you know, since then he's gone on to attend University of Pennsylvania, and he's since has become a real estate development executive. So it was just interesting to hear his trajectory since then. And then finally, you know, the last Democratic candidate, who I came in knowing a lot about, is Jeremiah Lowry, because he comes from a food activism background. So, you know, I'll just come right out and say I've been supporting his campaign because I really respect his grassroots work for various local food organizations, from Common Good City Farm to, you know, being a national advocate for Restaurant Opportunity Center. And I have to say that watching him in this format, his activist identity really came through. You know, he was doing a lot of, I don't know what it's called, like the spirit fingers when he agreed with what another candidate was saying. And, you know, he would say, I like to co-sign with this candidate, or that this very kind of advocacy-based lingo came through culturally in how he presented. I would like to play one quick clip where he explains why he thinks his work in advocacy translates to work on the council.
I'm the only candidate running in this race that's been working on all these issues for over a decade. And as I talked about, I'm not just up here saying, you know, well, I did do a little research, and so now I know how to answer the questions. I'm just going to, you know, spew it to the audience. No, I've actually put my hands in the dirt. I've actually organized restaurant workers. I've actually been to Food Policy Council meetings. I've actually sat in late night meetings in the public library trying to bring the Good Food Purchasing Program here in D.C. I put in the sweat work. I put in the organizing work for over a decade here in D.C. And I want to continue that journey. And if I don't make it to the D.C. City Council, you're still going to see me at community meetings. You're still going to see me at the community gardens. And you're still going to see me organizing to really transform and revolutionize our food system here in D.C. I'm one of you. I'm a food advocate. I've been a food advocate, and I look forward to continuing our journey on the D.C. City Council.
So I'm curious whether, you know, you've worked with the City Council for many years. Do you see a lot of council members that come from that background, and how do they perform in the council versus, you know, coming from a different background, being a community grassroots advocate?
I think a lot in Washington, D.C., a lot of our council members really started out as community workers and community advocates. That I believe, as a Washingtonian, that's really critical, because they can speak to the issues. Mm-hmm. They understand what community looks like, what neighborhood looks like.
Right.
That said, we also need people who understand a wide range of things, because you cannot be just a one-issue person. What you need to understand is that and what many of us in the anti-hunger or healthy food access space understand is that you need to have a wide range. You need to have some understanding of housing. You need to have some understanding of education. You need to have some understanding about jobs, because all of those relate. It doesn't help to give someone food if they have no house to take it to. We need to have people have jobs, because while SNAP is wonderful to get you out of poverty, what we really want you to do is we want you to have a job so you don't even have to be on SNAP. But while you're trying to find a job, education, many people on SNAP are low wage earners, partially because of their education. So we need candidates that understand food, but they need to understand the other issues because there's an interplay there that's critical in order to get things done.
Right, right. Thank you. And let's move over to the independent. What's the phrase? The independent docket? The independent...
That'll work.
What do politicians say? So first we have the incumbent, Alisa Silverman, and she's running for re-election as an independent. And I'm going to play a quick clip of her making kind of a key point of her argument that evening.
When I began on the council, it was an economic development meeting about Ward 7 and how to spur development on Nanny Helen Burroughs Avenue. And the discussion was not even the dollar store was willing to move in. We spend a lot of money on economic development incentives for where development's already going to go. I'll give you an example. I'm very well known for being against spending money for parking spaces at Union Market. I was the lone vote against it on the council. You know, developers give a lot of money to campaigns. That's why I don't take any corporate contributions. So I can vote in the people's interest, not in the corporate interest.
How unusual is it to have a track record of refusing corporate funding as a council member? Do they all claim that, or is that truly kind of a claim to fame for her?
I don't think that they all do that,
uh-huh.
But I love the fact that Alisa does it.
Okay, that's helpful. So challenging her is Dion Reeder, who stands out from the pack in the sense that she is... you know, the one panelist who is a restaurant owner. She has a restaurant called Cheers at the Big Chair DC in Anacostia. Have you ever been?
No, I
okay.
haven't.
Okay, I was curious to look into it. So, you know, she says she's running because she's against the paid family leave legislation that actually Alisa Silverman spearheaded. Finally, or actually not finally, then there's Ambrose Lane Jr., who I thought was a very compelling speaker. I had known him previously as leading the Health Alliance Network, which is based in Ward 7. And I don't know whether you've been able to follow his work there, but what do you think have been his big issues that he, or, you know, victories leading that group over his tenure?
Well, we are coalition members with Ambrose's group. And so one of the things, and also I'm trying not to be specific about any of them, but he really is a true advocate for Ward 7. He understands the interrelationship between health and hunger and food, and he's a very loud advocate. But Dion also, we didn't mention, she's also a community activist, and that was where I first met her, is that she's a serious community activist in Ward 8, and she did a lot of work around that. So that's going to be a really, I mean, all of those are going to be really tough races,
right?
Because each person brings that community piece with them.
A true connection with their constituents.
Exactly.
And I want to just play Ambrose's closing statement. I just think he's very good at punching through his platform, and it's helpful to hear.
Number one, the grocery store investment fund. Number two, fund the food hubs that are in the Healthy Schools Act and in Ward 8. Number three, provide incentives for more cooperative grocery stores that are smaller and can be placed in more areas of the city. In my first 100 days as your council member, I will seek legislation that calls for a zero hunger policy.
So as an anti-hunger leader, what do you think of this zero hunger policy opportunity? I guess has been acted in Brazil and other countries. Is that a way forward for the city?
I think that no one, that and people will attest to this, my job, and it says on my business card, ending hunger in the nation's capital. So there should be no hunger in the capital of the most important country in the known universe. So I agree on a certain level, zero hunger. I think it's aspirational. I think we need to figure out how to get there.
Right.
But it would be really nice if there were someone who could just do that. And there are a number of ways for us to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then finally on the independent docket was Ome Kongo Dibinga. I think he goes as Ome, who comes from a more academic background. He's a business owner in Ivy City. He had a lot of good ideas at the national and global level, but didn't have as much experience, in my perspective, applying that locally. So let's shift a little bit, Beverly, and let's talk about some of these key issues that kept emerging throughout. And you know, I'd like you to comment from a perspective of what you're looking for from the council. I guess, actually, let's start there. What are your highest priorities for those who will be elected? Like, what are the one or two things that you would ask the council for that would push forward your agenda?
I think that when they're talking about housing and when they're talking about education, they need to be talking also about food. And I will give them a wide range of things to talk about in the food system. We can talk about healthy access to food, so whether we're building grocery stores or whether we are supporting farmers markets or whatever the continuum is on this food, healthy access. Also, I want someone who understands the relationship between food jobs and food. So we have a thriving restaurant industry. We have a way to employ many of the individuals who find themselves food insecure. How do we make that happen? So that relationship between economic development and food.
Right.
Okay.
And actually, that's one that you know, Elisa Silverman said, you know, we spend $150 million on job training annually that doesn't lead to jobs. She really held up DC Central Kitchen's model as a way forward. She said they have a 90% placement rate. So clearly, you know, that's something that she at least wants to really dig into.
And it's absolutely what we need. And there are a whole group of us who really believe that we can take advantage of that. But we've got to have someone or someone's willing to work together to have that happen. Also, in the Healthy Schools Act, which I, full disclosure, DC Hunger Solutions helped to write, we talk about I call it a central kitchen, where we can actually help develop many of the foods, where we could help people have access to doing foods and then being able to sell it in the neighborhood, where we can actually develop, grow, cook healthy foods that we use in our institutions, whether it's the hospital, whether it's on college campuses, on school campuses, after school programs. We can do that. There is in the law. We need someone who's willing to enact it. There are groups of us who are ready to and willing to jump into that. There are federal nutrition dollars that can be used to buy the food to do that. So those, and I want someone who understands that, pays attention to that. So that's yet another economic avenue for us to do that.
That's really exciting. I heard Ambrose Lynn Jr. talk about Trayon White's bill to support a food hub in Ward 8. Is that separate, or is that this kind of central kitchen that would provide institutions, as you're discussing?
It's kind of separate, but it could be that.
Uh-huh.
We could, in fact, put it in a neighborhood so that we could actually provide jobs as well as providing food.
And then Jeremiah talks about school food a lot. You know, he's a huge proponent of the Good Food Purchasing Program, and you know, it seems that he's all for having food made from scratch, either in each school or at least within the district, to go to these big institutions.
There's something to be said for that. There's some nostalgia about the kitchen ladies, and then there's some people who aren't excited about the kitchen ladies. I want the children to have access to healthy food.
Right.
Which is where we come in with the federal nutrition programs. But there are people who are doing that. DC Central Kitchen actually cooks food in many of our public schools, the charters as well as the traditionals. And I have, for breakfast, I have been to some of those,
yep,
which are actually fantastic.
Right.
Now, what we get to do, can we scale up? Is there an opportunity to do that? Are there other organizations that can do that? Who's going to monitor that? Who's going to pay attention to that? So, and what is the cost of that? So there's something balancing cooking food in each school or having school food delivered to each school. I love the idea of at least it needs to be made in the District of Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
So whoever we get, I would like them to have access to healthy food. You're going to hear me say that over and over again. If it can be made in D.C., then guess what? We can employ people in D.C.
Right.
And our dollars stay in D.C.
Right. And then the last issue I want to touch on before we have to close is co-op development. Several of the candidates really held up co-ops as the way to create community ownership and kind of attack this problem of racial equity ultimately. And Jeremiah talked about wanting to bring back the Office of Co-op Development. Ambrose Lane Jr. listed it as a priority. Are co-ops something that you at DC Hunger Solutions see as a solution, or not necessarily a key priority?
You will always hear me talk about the food continuum. And so for me, the food continuum are grocery stores, healthy corner stores, all of the child nutrition programs, feeding the homeless, the emergency food from the food banks, different way farmers markets.
In we have school different markets. It's school, yeah.
We have different ways in order to provide it. Why can't we sort of investigate what a co-op might look like? Now, the challenge around that is how do we have it happen? How do we make sure that it truly is community-based? And part of that is going into the community and asking them what they want. Right. Some people want a grocery store. They feel that if they have a grocery store, then you respect them. Others think, I would like to run a co-op, or I would like to be able to shop in a co-op. I'm not sure everyone understands what a co-op is, but we need that continuum to make sure that everyone is getting what they need.
Right, right, that everyone's served and empowered as part of their neighborhood food system.
Exactly.
So, Beverly, I asked you to think about an action item that our listeners can take, and I've already offered my main one, which is if you are listening from D.C., vote on the 19th, put it on your schedule. But, what is something that you hope listeners do in their day-to-day lives to change the local food system for the better, or the world's food system for the better?
Well, as I mentioned early, 1 in 7 households in the District of Columbia faces food insecurity. 20% of our seniors are food insecure. I want residents, rich and poor, from wherever, to understand that there is serious hunger in the District of Columbia, and all of us can contribute to that. And yes, we need to vote, and we need to put people in office who are compassionate, also innovative, and entrepreneurial in order to be able to solve this issue. But it really is a community event, and it's not just for those of us who see this on a daily basis, but it is our community as a city, and all of us need to get involved in it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Beverly is always moving and shaking, and her team, posts updates on Twitter at DC Hunger. So I encourage you all to follow them as they, will DC Hunger Solutions be providing any commentary or any thoughts throughout the election season? Or what is DC Hunger Solutions' role in an election like this?
Well, what we really do concentrate on is policy development, legislative development, and the full utilization of all of the federal nutrition programs. So what we will be focusing on is summer meals. Mm-hmm. Summer meals are starting, and making sure that we have those and that we're gearing
up.
Increase participation. We are number one in the nation in participation in summer meals.
DC is.
But we still have only 56% of the children who are eating breakfast and lunch during the school year are actually getting summer meals. They are not taking a sabbatical. We need to find them and feed them.
Right, right. Well said. So I will look forward to the 19th. I think that it's been helpful to hear your perspective from years of being part of the system. And I thank the listeners for tuning in and for wanting to get more involved in our local government. I ran into Kenyon McDuffie this week. I wish that I had talked to him. Don't miss your chance if you are with a council member. They want to hear from us. All right. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you next week on Lunch Agenda.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.